Today is Friday, the 5th of August, 2016, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the 2016 Olympic Summer Games open tonight in Rio de Janeiro. There is concern in Hong Kong as prospective candidates vie for office in new elections.
It is very obvious that Hong Kong nowadays is not a place of rule of law. It is a place ruled by men, ruled by the Communist Party.
VOA's Steve Miller has an in-depth look at that. And you will hear who is the most popular country music artist. Stay with us on International Edition. Well, the 2016 Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro officially kick off Friday night with an opening ceremony in Brazil's Maracanã Stadium, marking the first time the Games have ever been held in South America. Media coverage in the lead-up to the Games has been dominated by negative stories about problems with polluted water in the host city, violence in the streets, and a Russian doping scandal, among other things. But organizers are hoping to move past those issues and use the opening ceremony to show a different side of Rio. Now, the ceremony, which is expected to draw upwards of 3 billion viewers across the world, will showcase Brazil's native bossa nova music in a carnival-style celebration with samba dancers shaking their hips. The local organizing committee for Rio 2016 said the ceremony will feature dancers from 12 samba schools in Rio. Brazilian pop star Anitta and musicians Caetano Veloso and Gilberto Gil, who were exiled from the country by Brazil's military dictatorship in the late 1960s. Now, apparently, soccer star Pelé, who has not been feeling well, but will not be lighting the cauldron because of ill health. Let's head down to Rio now. VOA's Park Brewer, who has covered many Olympic Games, joins us now. Park, what, if anything, makes these Olympic Games different than any or all of the others that you've covered?
Well, certainly the big difference, Ira, is this the first ever Olympic Games in South America. And I think that's one of the reasons Brazil was awarded these games. As you know, the World Cup was held here just 2 years ago. And I know many people, including myself, thought to hold two such huge events that cost so much money to stage it would be very difficult. And but Brazil appears to be ready. You know, there were a lot of questions and certainly a lot of issues surrounding these games, but you know, usually once these games get started, people forget about a lot of the things leading up to the games. In fact, I even spoke with coming in at the airport to one of the guys who oversees some of the events on the open water. These are the ones that swimming off the beach. It says we've been testing the water and it seems to be okay out there. Now the water in the bay is another situation itself. But certainly, you know, having the Olympics in South America for the first time is a huge thing. So certainly everybody in this country is hoping they can pull this off without, you know, major issues during the games.
Yeah, but, you know, what about the participants? What about those who are going to be rowing boats in sewage? What about those who are going to be playing volleyball on the Copacabana beach, which apparently has virus in it? I know you've touched on that, but, I mean, that has to be a concern to some people, does it not?
Oh, it has to be, and certainly, as I mentioned when I spoke to one of the guys, a lot of these competitors, they'll be tested for things afterward. They're, you know, they're going to wear special things to clog their ears and their nose so they don't get water in body cavities when they compete. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, we really won't know until the competition gets underway if, in fact, athletes are going to get sick from competing in these waters, because we know they are very polluted. There's no doubt about that.
Now, what can we expect in tonight's opening ceremony?
Well, it's really interesting. The producer of this opening ceremony did not reveal the budget for this thing. Of course, London spent $41 million on its opening ceremonies 4 years ago. The producer of this ceremony said the expenditure is just right for Brazil today. He called it a very emotional ceremony. It'll have a lot of meaning, but he said it won't gloss over Brazil's social and economic challenges. It's going to deliver a message of the environment, about the future of the planet. And it's interesting that he said that, because one of the things that a lot of the reporters have noticed here already is there's little to no recycling, at least that we've not seen. So it's interesting that that's going to be one of the messages, the environment of the future planet, because, you know, a good part of that effort is to recycle. And he said the IOC in Rio sustained this wish So it'll be interesting. The ceremony is supposed to last about 3 hours. I think as you talked a little bit about it earlier, the theme is supposed to be a summer's day on Ipanema Beach. And the producer said there will be a flavor of a smile throughout. And, of course, it's always good to smile, isn't it, Ira?
Yeah, that it is, Park. You and I have gone through many sporting events where we were forced to do that, but we did it anyway. Now comes after that is the sporting competition. What countries come into these games with great and, shall we say, realistic expectations? And that includes the Russian team, which has been dilapidated, diminished.
Well, that's certainly true. And there's certainly no prediction that Russians will top the medal table here. Even after doing so well in Sochi at the Winter Games a couple of years ago, I think there's no doubt about it that the United States is one of the favorites to the top of the medal chart. Indeed, China will be right up there, maybe the Australians, the British. But you always have surprises in Olympics, too, and it's nice to see how many different countries at the end of the Games actually do win medals. But I think there's no doubt about it. I think probably the U.S. team is a heavy favorite to top the medals chart.
And we should mention this refugee team. For the first time, the Olympics are going to feature a team made up of refugees from several afflicted countries. That's meant to draw attention to the plight of other refugees. There's 10 of them, 6 men and 4 women. That's going to be fascinating to see, isn't it?
It really will. And one of my colleagues, Alvaro Andrade, was actually in the Athletes Village a couple of days ago and had a chance to talk to a few of them, and you know they're extremely excited to be able to compete in these games, and it's just wonderful them to be here. They're not looking for fantastic results or even medals, maybe, although you always can hope, but they're just so excited to be here.
Well, and then of course if you have to interview the members of the American team, the USA team, you don't go to the Olympic Village, you have to go to a cruise ship, is that correct?
Well, that's the basketball players anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, the professionals from the National Basketball Association and the Women's National Basketball Association, they are indeed staying on a ship. And I remember seeing the comments from one of the women's players. She said, "I've never been on a ship before, so this is going to be pretty interesting."
That it is. Park, you're there for a while. Enjoy yourself. You know how hard the work is. You've done it many times, and we'll be talking to you throughout. Okay? Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Howard. Nice to chat.
Park Brewer, our VOA sports person. I guess he's sports director or something.
Call him a sports guru because call me the social media guru.
Well, that's correct. That's the social media guru. That's Andrew Palcheski. I guess the Olympics are big on social media, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the opening ceremony hasn't even started yet, and yet that's already a top trending hashtag, opening ceremony. I want to talk a little bit about what Twitter's doing in the lead up to the Olympics. They're going to have hundreds of emojis that they're releasing, that when you use certain hashtags, these emojis pop up. Now, we've seen this before for things like the Super Bowl, other huge events, international events, but this is the largest release of emojis that they're going to do. They're going to do over 260. All the teams are going to be represented. They're going to have little flags, including that refugee team. So if you do hashtag USA, you're going to have an American flag. If you do hashtag UGA, you're going to have a Ugandan flag, which creates a little bit of a problem for fans of the University of Georgia who use that hashtag. They have had a little bit of problem with that. But you're going to see also all of the competitions represented with these emojis, and in 4 different languages. It's going to be English, Spanish, French, and Portuguese. So if you use any of those hashtags for the different events, whether it's athletics or swimming or gymnastics, you're going to have those emojis pop up. So,
and then, of course, next year will be the Emoji Olympics with the emojis themselves competing. Right?
Well, I think that's probably the next step. It's a natural progression from covering the actual athletic Olympics to online Olympics.
Where you have millions of people sitting there with their thumbs on their cell phones.
Texting away.
Right,
well,
exactly.
Well, case in point, actually, the other story that's kind of come out of the Olympics so far, one of the other stories, is the top Japanese male gymnast who ran up over $5,000 worth of charges on his phone playing Pokemon Go.
Uh-huh.
Thankfully for him, he's worked out something with his telecom company, and I think he only has to pay $30 a month for unlimited data. They cut him a deal.
That's for the next 300 years.
Well, right? I don't know how much he's going to have to pay, but it's significantly reduced from the $5,000 at least. But and then they were seeing the other moments from the Olympics, too, like the Ghanaian team. They were having a dance-off in the streets. They were having a good old time before even the ceremonies start. We're seeing a lot of this documented on social media. Even, athletes eating lunch, in the kind of training facility. They're sitting there and they're playing games, trying to flip the water bottle, and they're trying to do slow-mo videos of that. So they're, it really does emphasize that even though these are supremely talented, athletic people. They are people at the end of the day, so they're just like us. They're killing time on social media, making goofy videos and all that kind of stuff. So we'll continue to see that, I'm sure, over the next couple
having
weeks.
Covered a number of Olympic Games myself, after these people compete, and maybe before some of them compete, there's some big party times going on.
Yeah, I don't know how much of that we're going to see. I think that they're pretty careful to say, you know what, try to keep it, you know, under control, or at least keep it off social media.
Just ask anybody who's covered it what happens there. That's Andrew Palshevsky, and you can stay in touch with him by...
on Twitter, at APAL, A-P-A-L.
And with me as well.
At VOA Millman.
Thank you. Andrew Palshevsky with us. This is International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, the United States says it is on track to meet the Obama administration's goal of welcoming 10,000 Syrian migrants and refugees by the end of September. A security operation is underway in central Afghanistan trying to free five Pakistani aviation experts and their Russian navigator from Taliban custody. U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has admitted he was wrong and claiming to have seen video of a U.S. cash payment being delivered to Iran the same day that Iran released four Americans it had detained. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on voanews.com, on the website, on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
For the first time, astronomers have been able to get a glimpse of a water snow line in a protoplanetary disk, which is a disk of material surrounding a new star that may later form into planets. This water snow line marks the point within these leftovers of star formation where the temperature and pressure drop to a point to allow water ice to form. These snow lines usually form closer to a star whose light overwhelms any possible observation. In this case, it was formed farther out than normal from the star, identified as V883 Orionis, so astronomers were able to image it. It's believed that a sudden and significant increase in the brightness of the star is what pushed the snow line out to where it could be seen. The astronomers say that this phenomenon is about 6 billion kilometers from the star, comparable to the orbit of Pluto in our solar system. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman. Stock prices in New York started the day bringing smiles to many an investor and followed the latest U.S. jobs report. International Edition's Joe Malandrino joins us live now with a story from New York City. Joe, what happened?
Well, the U.S. equity indexes are having a very happy Friday. The S&P 500 hit a new record high intraday. The NASDAQ index is looking to approach a record closing high. And essentially, this is because the all-important employment report for July showed payrolls increased by 255,000 jobs, and that blew away the consensus number. Unemployment remains at 4.9%. But what we were looking for was a growth in hourly wages, and we got that. And I think that's one of the reasons why the stock market is reacting well to it. Specific sectors that have been performing well, the tech sector, multiple parts of it, social, semiconductors, consumer-related names are doing great. It's up 8% on the quarter. A lot of our favorite traded names, Amazon up 16% on the year, Alphabet 12%, Facebook, LinkedIn, Apple up 14% in 3 months. So you're seeing a cyclical rotation where the tech sector was out of favor over the past year, and we saw industrials and consumer names really come to the forefront. We're seeing that rotation now back into growthier names like the tech space.
Well, very, very interesting stuff. And it just appears that just a bit of good news, and as far as anything financial or job-wise or anything is concerned, could just set off and ignite the market.
Right. And Ira, you made an excellent point there, because in the past, bad news was considered good because there was the expectation that we'd continue to get interest rate cuts or more quantitative easing by the Fed and central banks. We're seeing the opposite now. We're seeing good news actually acting good, and the market's catching a nice bid off of that, which lends me to believe that we could see a really good retail sales number next Friday as well, as consumer spend trends improve. If we continue to get better employment, better retail sales numbers, that's going to mean a good fourth quarter GDP in the all-important December holiday spend.
Jill is now about ready to phone her stockbroker, and maybe you should as well. Jill, we'll talk to you next week. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, too.
Jill Malandrino joining us. This is VOA.
Have a good weekend, Patrice.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
VOA's International Edition continues. Candidates banned from standing for election in Hong Kong because they're advocating a split from mainland China led the city's first pro-independence rally today as tension over the upcoming vote escalates. Five pro-independence candidates who tried to register were rejected by election officials who said their stance went against Hong Kong's many constitutions. Critics are slamming the move as censorship. VOA Steve Miller has an explanation of what's going on.
Hong Kong's Legislative Council is slated to hold an election for new members on September 4th. Now, during past election cycles, candidates only needed to attest that they would uphold the basic law, essentially Hong Kong's constitution, and pledge allegiance to Hong Kong itself. However, this time, candidates running for office need to sign an additional pledge that Hong Kong is an inalienable part of China. Chan Ho-tin and Yung Kae-chung refused to sign the pledge, which then resulted in the Hong Kong Electoral Affairs Commission banning them from the election. Edward Leung, who in the past had advocated for Hong Kong's independence, won a seat in the Legislative Council during a by-election in February of this year. He signed the new pledge proclaiming One China, but was informed this week that he was barred from participating in the election.
It is very obvious that Hong Kong nowadays is not a place of rule of law. It is a place ruled by men, ruled by the Communist Party. This decision is illegal, but they are still doing so because they dare to do so. They dare us that we would not do anything against this authority, but that's not true. Hong Kong people will still continue to fight for our autonomy.
VOA contacted the Electoral Affairs Commission, but it declined the interview request.
I do think that what we see in a broader sense with Beijing's policy towards Hong Kong.
That's John Minnick, East Asia analyst for Stratfor.
Is that in some sense, I think they're coming to realize what a liability even the concept of Hong Kong autonomy is to Beijing's larger political goals.
Part of those political goals, Minnick says, came to light when Beijing detained Hong Kong booksellers through extrajudicial renditions, something he calls
extreme measures that we haven't seen before. And I think that they indicate that the government, they're in some sense moving to a position where Beijing has larger political goals it's pursuing, and it's willing to step back or to draw back against the one country, two systems principle if it needs to in order to achieve those goals.
That is VOA Steve Miller with an explanation of what is going on in Hong Kong. Let's move to music now. Who do you think is the top country artist of all time? Well, according to Billboard magazine, it is George Strait, also affectionately known in country as King George. Nikki Strong of VOA Music tells International Edition Sarah Williams how this country legend has reigned supreme.
Well, Nikki, this is a huge honor. So what criteria did Billboard use to determine who would be the greatest?
It was basically a numbers game. For the first time, Billboard compiled its country charts over the past six decades, going back to 1958. So they looked at the genre's top artists, songs, and albums and how they fared. So they were assigned values on how they were ranked on the charts, the length of the time in that position, etc. And King George, as we lovingly refer to him, had recorded 44 number one hits on the Hot Country Songs chart, plus an unprecedented 26 number one top country albums, from 1984's Right from Wrong to 2015's Cold Beer Conversation. So King George has ruled the Billboard charts like no other.
George Strait is also honoring Jim Lauderdale at the Americana Music Awards September 21st.
Yeah, he is. Jim Lauderdale is one of Americana and country music's most accomplished songwriters, and he's being honored for his lifelong contributions to Americana music. And George Strait, in particular, has recorded over a dozen of Lauderdale songs, including Twang and Where the Sidewalk Ends. So basically, one legend will be honoring another.
In addition to King George, who rounds out the top five?
Okay, so number five is Conway Twitty. Number four is Alabama.
Oh.
Number three is Willie Nelson.
Uh-huh.
And number two, not surprisingly, is Merle Haggard.
Billboard also lists the biggest country album of all time and the biggest country song as well.
Yeah, so the top country album is one of my favorites. It's Shania Twain's Come On Over. Yay, Shania! And the top country song is Florida Georgia Line with Cruz. Now, this is funny because the song only came out in 2012.
Yeah.
So it really speaks to technology and the impact that digital sales has had on the charts.
You can also hear music from all of these great artists on Country Hits with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. Feel free to share your thoughts as well. You can reach Nikki on social media at VOA underscore music on Twitter and VOA Music on Facebook. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
You're very welcome.
Cold beer conversation.
You have been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook, VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for being with us. Our thanks to Director Patrice Martin. Mr. Chung has been our engineer. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The international community is facing a formidable challenge in the Lake Chad Basin region in defeating the terror group Boko Haram, while at the same time helping those whose lives have been thrown into chaos by the group and are in desperate need of humanitarian support. In remarks at a UN Security Council briefing, U.S. Ambassador to the UN Samantha Power spoke of the horror she heard from individuals when she visited regional camps serving those who had fled Boko Haram's violence, the looting and burning of homes, the murder of men and boys, the rape and abduction of women and girls. A robust military effort against Boko Haram is critical, said Ambassador Power. The multinational joint task force, composed of units from Benin, Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria, is playing a growing role in improving coordination between countries, as well as in planning and intelligence sharing. These efforts have produced important gains in recent months, including freeing thousands of hostages, destroying dozens of terrorist camps, and recovering around 75% of the territory Boko Haram once controlled. Ambassador Power emphasized that the military fight against Boko Haram must also include respect for human rights. Ambassador Power applauded the European Union and the United Kingdom for their contributions to the multinational joint task force, noting that the U.S. has supported the force with more than $71 million of assistance, including advisors, logistics support, and non-lethal equipment. She urged other member states to step up and support this critical effort. Ambassador Power stressed that in addition to strengthening the military operation, much more is needed to address the dire humanitarian situation. In the last 2 years, the U.S. provided more than $281 million in humanitarian aid for the countries affected by Boko Haram, but they remain grossly underfunded. There are 2.5 million people displaced within their nations and some 150,000 pushed beyond their borders. A key point, more than 90% of displaced people have been taken in by extended family members, a testimony to the goodness and altruism alive in the region, even as it is beset by Boko Haram's brutal evil. Now is the time, said Ambassador Power, for the international community to step up and assist the suffering people of the Lake Chad Basin region, to empower the good and defeat the evil of Boko Haram.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.